Fiancés, thank you so much for tuning into the Hello Prenup podcast, where we discuss all things finances, relationships, trends, and of course, prenups. And as people who spend all day, every day thinking about how we can improve the lives of couples all over the world at any stage in their relationship, we thrive in helping engaged couples start their marriage off on the right foot with empathy, compassion, and of course, protection. Our guest today is Raymond Heckmack. Raymond is a California family law attorney whose practice of law has been devoted exclusively to areas of family law, including divorce, paternity, custody support issues, and of course, prenuptial agreements. Since 2018, Raymond's practice shifted from divorce litigation to specializing in marital agreements, divorce consulting, and divorce mediation, where he educates and empowers couples on the financial and legal implications of entering or dissolving a marriage. When Raymond's not helping couples navigate financial conversations, he's with his wife and his two kids and promoting the value of prenups online as the prenup guy. Without further ado, here is Raymond Heckmack. Hi, Raymond. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to chat with you. First and foremost, can you give us a little bit about your background and what inspired you to be a part of family law?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on the podcast. I got involved in family law about 16 years ago while I was still in law school, and I was exploring what are the things that really fed my enthusiasm. And because my family was in the hospitality world, connecting with people and talking to people on a personal level was always something that was important to me. And as I learned about different areas of law, family law came up, and it really was an area that I felt that I could achieve my goals and have those personal relationships with people. And it started from there. And I worked with two different law firms before starting my own law firm. And for the past, I would say about 6-7 years, my focus has really been on prenuptial agreements, divorce consulting, and mediation work.
Amazing. And you're known as the Beverly Hills prenup attorney. So that's a big title with big clientele. How did you get started with some of the most affluent customers, I want to say, or clients in California?
Well, a lot of the process has been in terms of connecting with people in our area and really just trying to become a prenup expert in this area. And there's not a lot of attorneys that focus their practice on prenuptial agreements. And I have found that there really is a niche for that. And it's a process that I really love and that I think there's huge value in. And I take the time and care necessary in drafting prenuptial agreements rather than being like a side gig to my litigation world. But since I've decided that I'm no longer litigating cases and I'm not going to court and fighting, I'm able to spend that time necessary in drafting agreements and really giving them the attention they need.
What kind of attention does a prenup require, and why is that so fruitful for you?
So there's two things that really require attention. The first and foremost, it's an emotional process. You're helping two people plan their marriage, plan what it is that their marriage will look like financially, and facilitating those conversations and helping people that may not be communicating as well as they should be to have those conversations about money and really being clear and concise as possible about what their expectations are of themselves as well as each other in their marriage. And so those conversations are so important to have. And it's a big part of my practice to facilitate those conversations, force people to actually talk to one another before they get married, which a lot of family law attorneys will say, no, don't talk to them. Let the attorneys figure it out. But I really hate that approach because you're not going to have attorneys helping you in your marriage whenever you have a fight. That's not the way it's handled. Couples need to learn how to talk to one another and have these really important and somewhat uncomfortable conversations. And the second part is that when you're drafting a prenuptial agreement, you're basically rewriting California law for these couples. So a lot of times we have to think of as many foreseeable situations within the provisions to make sure that in the event of divorce, the terms can be easily followed and that they make sense and they cover as many situations as we can possibly foresee.
I love that you want to empower the couple to have the conversation themselves, because the attorneys are not the one getting married. They are. Right. What's some advice that you have for couples who may not have a strong soft skill set of bringing up tough topics like finances?
So first off, I do have a conversation guide on my website, and that conversation guide is a great place to start where you're having conversations about money. You're not talking about a prenuptial agreement. You're definitely not talking about divorce, but you're talking about how money plays a role in your life, your family's life, your parents' lives, your life growing up, how money has played a role before marriage. Are you a spender, saver? What are the ways that money plays a role and what's important to you? And when you start off the conversation with that, you're able to understand where your partner is coming from in terms of how they look at money. And you get the ideas of what are in their mind about money rather than dollars and cents. And as Esther Perel says, most arguments during marriage about money are not about the money. It's about how we're spending the money and what our connection is to that money. And so by having those conversations, you're really starting yourself off on a foundation of understanding where your partner is coming from. And so what we do is, first, we educate our clients on California family law, so you have an understanding of what getting married actually means. And from there, you're able to decide what's right for your marriage and what's not. And things that are not, we come up with solutions or options of what you're able to basically rewrite the law to be. And I always tell my clients, go home, open up a bottle of wine, light the fireplace, and get ready to have some really uncomfortable conversations, because this is the time for growth. And they have those conversations, and sometimes they come back and they say, wow, that was really hard. We don't align on anything. And I said, well, that's a good thing. So, but let's see where we can go from there. Or they say, wow, that was really empowering. We were able to really plan our lives together, and we're even more confident that this is going to work now than we did before, because now it's not only love, it's practical, it's planning, it's knowing what we're getting ourselves into.
Absolutely. And I love set the ambiance, set the mood, and plan it, because I think so many times it's so hard to know when am I supposed to bring this up. So in that vein, do you think couples should bring it up even when they're dating and not even engaged yet?
Absolutely. I think that there's no reason to wait on these issues, because talking about money is something that's going to occur throughout your marriage, throughout your lives together. And before you engage, based on the fact that you love each other and you're best friends and you love to spend time together, marriage is way more than that. And having these conversations to actually decide whether or not you're going to be a great married couple rather than just dating is a huge step that needs to be discussed. And money is just one factor of it. There's a lot of other things that probably should be discussed that go really, really deep into what your relationship may look like and you may not know those things until you ask, or unfortunately, a lot of people don't find out until they face it in their marriage. And then they're like, whoa, I didn't know that about you. And that's when things can get a little difficult. So all these uncomfortable conversations, especially about money, really should be had before you engage and get family involved and start planning a wedding and parties and all of that, especially here in our community where there's big parties right upon the engagement. Everyone just basically says, oh, you're married now. But there's so many other steps in order to make sure that you're right for each other that you really need to make sure of before you make that jump.
Absolutely. And what are some things that California couples should know about California law once they get married?
Well, first off, I think you should know about California law before you get married. I think that, like as James Sexton says, it's like an app. When you're downloading an app on your phone, there's terms and conditions and you just press okay. And who knows what those even said. Marriage is very similar to that, except it affects you and your personal life and your financial life forever. And so the first thing I tell my clients is before you even get engaged or married, learn about California law, learn about how that affects all your income and assets during marriage, but also what you have now. How are the assets that you have before marriage going to be affected by it? Learn about how community property states work and how community property is created during your marriage to know whether or not that's right for you. I mean, we can get into a whole spiel about what California family law is, but I think the bottom line is you need to educate yourself before you get married. And that's really the main focus of my premarital financial consulting sessions, is to look at your finances and tell you what marriage would look like financially for you so you can decide whether the laws of California are right for you and your partner or not.
And so to distill that all down, the benefit of getting a prenuptial agreement is if they wanted to change or have a different contract outside of California agreement. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's basically what it is. You're rewriting California law to the extent you're allowed to. And it's mostly on financial issues. But right. I mean, if you get married without a prenup, you have a prenup. It's California law, bottom line. So either you work with the government's rules or you come up with your own rules that are right for you. And that's the choice there. And if California family law and the code is right for you and your partner, then you don't need a prenup. But what we always say is you may not need one, but you should definitely talk about one.
Yeah, absolutely. Consider it. One of the things that we see at Hello Prenup is that the prenup process kind of coaches them through all of those tough financial discussion topics in general, just because it is an outline of here are all the things to think about. What are some of the things that you wish people knew about prenups that is potentially a misconception about them today?
So, I mean, first and foremost, people think that prenups are a precursor to divorce. You're planning for your divorce. And I hate that because a prenup is so much more than that. And I think that when people look at prenups as a premarital planning tool, where you're planning for your marriage, not for your divorce, it opens up the world of possibilities and how you want to manage your finances and what your marriage would look like. So the first thing is that you're not planning for your divorce, you're planning for your marriage. And in line with that, prenups are not just because you have a lot of money or you're rich and maybe your partner is not. It's not only for wealthy people. Because you're planning for your marriage, you're planning on how you're going to grow together, but also maybe how you're going to grow separately and what that means for you. And it's more of an ideology of how are we both going to be happy in our marriage and what are our expectations in this marriage, not necessarily, again, the dollars and cents. So I think those points are really the two things. The misconceptions of prenups are that they're for wealthy people and that you're planning for divorce. They're not romantic and they don't have to be that way.
What are some of the non-financial things that a prenup could help a couple with while they're married?
I think that when you're able to have those conversations about money and you have expectations that have been settled and that you understand where your partner is coming from, and it allows for each of you to have financial autonomy during marriage in purchasing things that are important to you, having certain hobbies or buying gifts or things like that, I think it opens up the possibility of not having certain arguments and fights during marriage about money, where you're able to focus on other things of your relationship, other parts of your relationship. And in addition to that, when you do have any conflicts about money, you're able to approach those conversations from a place of understanding rather than being defensive about them, because you've had these conversations before. You know where somebody is, where their position is. And so you aren't defending yourself. You aren't trying to explain yourself. It's more of, okay, I understand who you are and this is important to you. Where are we going to go from here? And so even though the prenup really does deal with all financial issues, I think it opens up your marriage to explore more fruitful conversations in other areas when you're not just fighting about money and what that means.
I love that because there's not just money to fight about when you're married. There's all kinds of things to fight about when you're married. So let's get really good at having tough conversations in general. Why not talk about money first?
Exactly. And I mean, that whole prenup process and talking about money, it's an exercise of the brain. I mean, you're exercising how to talk to one another and how to really make things known to one another that are important to you. Let people know, let your partner know what your needs are, what your love language is. What is it that is going to make them feel loved and happy in a marriage? You know, I'm currently dealing with a prenup where the parties don't really communicate that well, and they're kind of scared to really say what it is that's important to them and what needs to happen for them to manage their business or manage their lives. And on the other hand, somebody has a need to feel supported. They have a need to know that their spouse is going to take care of them, and that's what's important to them, and that there's no expectation of them to support their family, you know? And so, unfortunately, they weren't able to say that straight up. They were always kind of like, oh, but this is kind of important to me. This is what I want. This is what I want. But there wasn't ever a conversation about why. And so we had to get into a four-way meeting with her attorney, and it turned into a little couples counseling therapy session where we weren't even talking about a prenup. The conversation of why do you feel like you need to be supported in a marriage? What's important to you? You know, and a conversation came, well, that's how I saw my dad take care of my mom. That's important to me. Okay, great. If that's important to you, your spouse needs to know that. They need to know that and how they are going to meet that need and know whether or not they're willing to do that. You know, because on the other side, he probably had an expectation of you working and supporting too. And so how do we find the middle ground here? How do we meet both of your needs, knowing that you're in one place and you're in another? How can we meet both of your needs? And having these conversations is just so, so vital, because a lot of people can't have these conversations just because they feel like they're really uncomfortable, or they don't feel right having them. But you got to get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Especially because a lot of the reasons that make it quote unquote uncomfortable are because it comes from a place of guilt or shame or personal need. And so just generally asking to feel safe in a marriage may feel like a lot, especially at a very exciting time when you're planning the wedding and the honeymoon and all these, you know, fun, exciting things. The last thing you want to talk about is something that could be very triggering for you.
Yeah. And it's fearful because a lot of people are afraid of what their partner may say. And it may not line up with how they see them, and they may not line up to what their marriage will look like. And they're afraid that things aren't going to work out and they're going to end up breaking up because they don't see eye to eye on certain things. And that's totally understandable. But you're better off learning about those things before you get married and before you get engaged than afterward, because they're going to come out at some point. Just because you don't talk about it now doesn't mean you're never going to talk about it. And it's not like, oh, I have a ring on my finger now. Now we can have all these disagreements, but you're not going anywhere. But that's not marriage. That's not a way to live your life. You want to be open and honest and really say what's on your mind and tell your partner what's important to you before you take that big jump.
One of the things that we see at Hello Prenup a lot are women who are scared to enter the marriage, raise kids, and then feel like, oh no, if something happens in this marriage, I'm probably going to be the one that's taking on all the household duties. I'm going to be making sure the kids are going to school on time, et cetera. We can't contract in child custody to a prenup, but what are some things that we can creatively do to include in a prenup that would help women feel more comfortable in their marriage and feel like they do have a safety net no matter what happens in the event that the marriage doesn't work out and there's kids involved?
Sure. So in situations like this, when one spouse or partner is going to be, the plan is for someone to be stay-at-home dad or mom and the other person is working, it really depends on the other provisions of the agreement. If everything is being kept as separate property and there's not any joint money or joint community property income, the ways in which we create safety nets in case somebody is not working at that time, maybe a monthly allowance, or that in the event that they do work, they get to keep that money on their own and they keep it as their separate property. There might be larger payouts In the event of divorce, equalization payments or a certain type of payment at the end of it. I've had provisions that say, okay, you're working now, but if we decide that you're no longer working, then I will pay your salary up to a certain point while you're not working to make sure that you're still earning what you did at your job, but you're earning it for our home. But also that's why community property laws exist. Community property laws were put into place because if one person is going to work and making money and the other is not, the idea was that the money that is being made outside of the home is community property money 50-50, so everyone shares in it. And so I would say that if certain people have that plan off the bat that no, one person will not be working and will be staying home to take care of things, then keeping everything separate property may not be the best situation for you. And that's part of that bigger conversation, because if somebody says, well, no, it's important for me to keep everything separate, well, no, you still need to consider the fact that if your partner is not working and making any money, how are they going to feel supported? And that's the conversation we have of trying to meet those two ideals.
I love that you brought up community property and that California is a community property state. So what does that mean? So I heard if we get married, community property states are designed to protect both parties in the event that one does become a stay-at-home parent for whatever reason or a caretaker, et cetera. What does that mean when you get married without a prenup and now it's a community property state?
So the general idea behind a community property state is that everything between the time of marriage and the date of separation, everything that is earned or acquired during that time is presumptively 50-50. So any income I earn based on my labor and efforts and skill is community money. What a dollar I make is a dollar for us, 50-50. Any asset that's purchased during marriage, like a house or real estate or cars, all of that is also 50-50. Obviously, there's nuances to the law in terms of how separate property comes into play, but community property in general wants to capture as much as possible during that period of time. Another example is if I have premarital assets, if I spend my time, effort, and skill on those premarital assets and they appreciate in value, where I make monetary investments in those premarital assets, then the community also gains an interest in that, because in effect, the community also owns my labor and my time and my effort and my skill during that period of time. So whatever I do with my time during marriage may also create community property interests. And that's the idea, is that if one person is not working, then they still benefit from the labor and time and effort of their partner. But we also live in a very different time than when these laws were originally made. We have a lot of couples that are both parties working. They're dual income homes. But again, things come into play. There's unforeseeable and foreseeable circumstances of either staying at home, giving up a career to some effect, taking care of children that affect either spouse. And so some people will need to discuss that and come to terms of what that would look like when the time comes.
Interesting. Okay. So do you think everyone should get a prenup?
So as I said before, I don't think everyone should get a prenup. I think everyone should at least talk about one. And the idea is that you educate yourself on California family law, find out if the laws are right for you. And if they are, then there's no need for a prenup. But if there are certain things that are not right for you, if there are certain laws that don't fit your relationship, then a prenup may be necessary. I mean, the idea is that like people are getting married every day, and every relationship and marriage is totally different. Everyone's financial lives are different. Everyone's expectations of marriage are different. And all of those relationships can't all fit into one set of default laws that are supposed to apply to everyone. It just doesn't work that way. Again, every relationship is different. And if the rules of your marriage are different than what California wants them to be, that's when you want a prenup.
Love it. Always consider it, but it's not always necessary for every single couple.
Absolutely. It's a discussion to be had.
Love it. Okay. And especially in California, What is alimony and what does it mean, especially that it's a community property state?
So alimony or spousal support is a payment upon divorce to the lesser earning spouse. And the idea is that the higher income earner is to pay the other person a certain amount of money per month in order to help them become self-supporting or to maintain a marital standard of living post-divorce. And the amount of time that that payment is made depends on how long you're married. Generally, if you're married for 10 years or less, we call that a short-term marriage, and you would be entitled to spousal support for half the length of marriage. 10 years or more is a long-term marriage, and depending how long it is and what the needs are, it could be indefinite. Now, that 10-year mark is not black and white. There are exceptions to that general rule, but that's just the gist of it.
Okay, great. And so does everybody get alimony if they didn't have a prenup and didn't waive it, and regardless of if it's a short-term or long-term marriage?
Well, it really depends on the circumstances of each person's without a prenup. It depends on the circumstances, the financial circumstances of the parties, who's working, who's not, how much they're earning, how long the marriage was. There are a lot of different factors that come into play. There's actually a code section called Family Code 4320, and that code lays out like 20 different factors that are taken into consideration as to whether or not somebody should be getting spousal support.
Got it. One of the benefits that we've seen at Hello Prenup is folks like waiving alimony. Since you said, and we see it all the time too, is because both parties are now contributing financially to the marriage, that's more common than it isn't. People are waiving alimony. Do you think that's an okay consideration for folks, or do you believe that everybody should consider having alimony in place regardless of if they're equal earners?
Again, it really depends on the circumstances, but I have seen many clients through Hello Prenup as well as others that are young in their careers, and they might be making equal amount of money. But that's not a reason to waive spousal support, because again, you don't know what the future holds. You don't know what you're going to be doing later on, whether someone's working or not, taking care of kids or not, staying home or not, changing careers, retiring, whatever that might look like. In addition to that, maybe there's unfortunately disability or inability to work in the future. So waiving spousal support is a huge, huge agreement and waiver. And I generally advise my clients not to waive spousal support in most situations. That's not something you should be doing. Because at the end of the day, if you don't waive spousal support and you're getting divorced and you're both still making the same amount of money, there probably wouldn't be spousal support anyway. So there's no reason to waive your right to it. You always want to preserve that right one way or another. Now, there are certain people that are entering into a marriage where one person might be earning a lot of money and the other person may not be. Those are times where somebody may want to limit their spousal support exposure in the future. And those issues can be addressed. But one important point for everyone to consider is that the fairness, the conscionability of any kind of spousal support waiver or limitation is measured at the time of enforcement or at the time of divorce. So you may come up with certain provisions of waiving or limiting spousal support now at the time of your marriage. But if you get divorced and your financial circumstances are very, very different at that time, somebody may say, well, no, these spousal support provisions aren't fair anymore. You're earning millions more than you said you were than when we made this agreement. And chances are it's going to get thrown out because it's not fair anymore. And a court may see that.
Interesting. And is it up to the judge to decide if this is considered fair and conscionable based on the terms that were agreed upon at the time of signing the prenup?
Yeah, it's the court's discretion based on evidence and the factors that are presented to the court to decide whether or not this restriction is conscionable or not.
So how is alimony paid out? Are there ways to be creative about alimony so that there isn't just a one size fits all of like monthly it's X amount? Can you do something like lump sum payments?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that people limit spousal support in their prenuptial agreements. First, on the duration side, You can say it's half the length of marriage, no matter how long your marriage is. You can use other fractions. There are people that also scale it where 0 to 5 years of marriage, it's a waiver or a certain amount or a certain length. 5 to 10 years, what happens then? 10 or more, what happens then? 15 or more, what happens then? So they could also be scaled and you can get creative. Certain people just say, you know what, let's just do a full waiver of spouse support, but if we get divorced, I'll pay you X amount lump sum payment based on a number of years of marriage. Some people even prepay spouse support where they're paying their spouse a certain amount every month during marriage and said, look, this is your money to keep. You don't have to spend it on anything, but this is your money now, but I'm not going to pay you later, kind of thing. So there's a lot of ways that the spouse support provisions can be addressed in a way that they aren't totally unconscionable at the time of signing. But again, there's no guarantee on spouse support waivers being enforced.
Okay. If someone doesn't get a prenup in California and they're bringing in a lot of debt to the marriage, does debt also become community property upon getting married?
So debt incurred prior to marriage is separate property debt. So that will stay separate property.
Okay.
Debt that you incurred during marriage is community property, right? Now, what happens is that if certain debts, so one thing that does happen is that when you get married, you're exposing yourself to your partner's debts, though. And what happens is that credit card companies or judgment debtors, they will come after both of you to get whatever they need. And so there's no protection against that. And that's why it's so important. It's not a matter of taking on someone's debt and being responsible for it. It's the idea that somebody can come and take your assets to make them whole for your partner's debt. And so what prenups do is really create a clear line that says, those are your debts, my debts. In the event somebody comes after me for your debts, you have to repay me. And whereas that's not provided for in California. Once you're married, you're responsible for whatever comes during that time.
Interesting. Okay. There's also some very fancy lifestyle clauses that go on in prenups, such as infidelity clauses, weight gain clauses, basically emotional armor clauses that people throw in to just feel safer in the marriage. What is your opinion of those?
Avoid them at all costs in California.
Why?
Yeah, they're not enforceable, and they can potentially invalidate your prenup as a whole if there are certain conditions that allow for, if you don't do this, you do that. We're in a no-fault state. So no one can put those types of lifestyle clauses and be penalized for cheating. You can't be penalized for gaining weight that caused divorce or anything like that. So you don't want to, at least in California, you're going to avoid those provisions at all costs.
Interesting. And I think we've seen allegedly in celebrity prenups that so-and-so could get $250,000 for every child they bring into the marriage under their prenup. Are those kinds of clauses enforceable?
No, you can't have any payments in regard to any children. I mean, what we do have is that if you get a life insurance policy, and you get a life insurance policy for every child or upon marriage, but you can't have payments upon having children. You can't have payments that have anything to do with children. The celebrity lifestyle clauses, I think a lot of them are either in other states or they're just rumors because those things don't happen.
Awesome. Okay, good. We've had the same expectation and feelings about it at Hello Prenup as well. So I'm glad that we're aligned. One thing that we've been hearing a lot from our fiancés is like, we had such a good prenup like process and experience, and it was actually kind of fun. How do I bring it up to my friends who are also engaged without approaching them and saying, hey, have you guys considered a prenup, and not insult them because prenups tend to have this taboo stigma attached to them? Any advice on how to bring it up to friends and family?
So again, it's about money. It's not about the prenup. So a lot of the conversations may have like, how have you guys talked about your money? What are you going to do with your money during marriage? Are you guys going to share money? Or is the expectation that you're both going to be working? Are you guys planning on having children? What happens if you have children? I mean, these are really intrusive questions of a friend to ask another friend. But I think that if you care about someone, you want to kind of put it on their radar that they should be talking about money and what money looks like and how they're going to buy a house and where money will come from and what they're going to share and what they're not going to share and whether that needs to be put down in writing. But I think a lot of it is that conversation, just talking about how money is going to be dealt with during the marriage.
I love it. Anything else you wish engaged couples knew before entering their marriage?
I mean, I said it once, I'll say it again. I think couples just need to educate themselves on California family law. You need to know what it is you're signing. You need to have an understanding of what you're exposing yourself to. And it's not bad or good. It's just knowing what you're signing up for before you sign that marriage certificate, because there are serious legal and financial implications of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do in a marriage once you get married. For example, when you get married, you actually owe a fiduciary duty to your partner. You owe a duty to offer any type of investment opportunity to your partner and the community before you do it on your own. And if you don't offer it, you're breaching that fiduciary duty. A lot of people will say, well, no, I run my business every day. I can't offer these investment opportunities to both of us all the time. And well, you have to. That's the rule. If you have separate, if you have separate property and you have community property, you have to offer it to the community property first. You can't just do it on your own whenever you feel like it. So these are rules that really come into play. And depending on what you do for work, it can have some serious ramifications. I would say that people that are involved in real estate or real estate development have the highest exposure for community property laws entering in their business world, or anyone that's owning a business. This type of work really exposes a lot of different community property laws and factors that can come into play in the event of divorce.
You heard him loud and clear, everybody. Educate yourself, know what you're getting into, and feel really good about the decisions as you enter the marriage. And why not fight now? Have tough conversations now, and then you're better and stronger because of it as you get married. Raymond, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate you being here. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, where can they find you?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to be here. You can find me on Instagram at HekmatFamilyLaw. My website is hekmatfamilylaw.com. And I'm also on TikTok as the prenup guy. And you can find me there on TikTok.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Raymond. And if you guys, again, if you want to reach out to him with any of your questions, please reach out to him at his sources that he just listed. Thank you so much, Raymond.
Thanks, Lauren. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you got a ton of value from this episode. And if you need a prenup, you know what to do. Head over to helloprenup.com and start your free account with your fiance now. Like we always say here at Hello Prenup, you're writing your life story together, so make sure you're on the same page. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.